Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week we bring on the rad artist who is saving my butt this week, Bleeding Edges, coming on and just rocking the house with all kinds of stuff, starting in pins, doing graphic design, making stickers, patches, and now working in toys. He is killing the game. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It helps us out. It's free for you, and it means the world to me. I'll kiss your face. If you want to jump on and find out what's going on with Toys on Tap, follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want even more Toys on Tap, we have video interviews and nitty-gritty episodes and all kinds of stuff that goes on the Patreon. That's where I will start posting up new toys that are coming down the pipeline, how far along they are in production, what it looks like to work with factories, all that kind of stuff. Even though I'm new, I want to give that information to you. Now let's get to this week's episode, Toys on Tap. Hey, this is Toys on Tap. I don't know if you've heard an episode. If you have, thank you for the support. We talk through all things art, and you are in the professional art design realm with toys, which is awesome. Yep. I think I've sent you a picture of a toy that I found that was you.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So just like we start every episode, tell us who you are, what you do.
You can call me Jeff. That's fine. My art name is Bleeding Edges, and I do a company called BXE Buttons, which started out as, you know, those little round buttons and then evolved into enamel pins. Then my wife, Stacia, was like, yo, you're mailing out a lot of stuff. I want in on this. So she started designing pins and doing it under the name Stacia Made. So whenever we do events and stuff, we're BXE Buttons x Stacia Made. And it's just collaborative between the two of us. But like when it comes to like toy stuff, it's just me as Bleeding Edges. And I've been doing art as Bleeding Edges for a long time. There used to be, still kind of, Bleeding Edges record label. So
yeah,
it's been an umbrella name for everything. But BXE is Bleeding X Edges.
Rad. That's so rad. I like when that happens. My wife hasn't jumped in yet on my toy stuff. And I don't know that she ever will. But it's always a cool thing when partners jump in.
And my wife's a graphic designer also. So
unfair.
She was like,
unfair.
Well, if the entire graphic design industry goes up in smoke, then we're screwed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's an artist as well. So, and I awesome. Think it's helped to expand her comfort levels and stuff with designing stuff. Like she designed she just really likes Mothra. So she made a Mothra pin and then people really liked it. And we're like, we should probably do more Godzilla themed pins. And she was like, and she was kind of hemming and hawing on it. And then she did a Godzilla one. She had a really good idea for the Godzilla pin. Actually, I have my whole pin board here. So I figured I could just grab stuff as we go. But her Godzilla design has a little train like dangling from the mouth.
Oh, that's awesome.
So like she did that and she was like really proud of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. And then I'm friends with the guy, John, who does Kaiju Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew he did a couple of Godzilla things. And he's like, well, you know, if you want to do it, like you should probably try to do more Godzilla stuff just to fit in. And we're like, with
okay.
My arm, okay.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. So we cranked out, I want to say, two more Godzilla theme pins last year. And really, really good. Like Kaiju Brooklyn's got like such a great vibe. And as much as I feel like I'm a Godzilla nerd and stuff, I was like a total poser compared to some of the people who were like, I believe this is Godzilla 58.
You know, yeah.
I fucking know, dude. I don't know. It's fucking Godzilla.
So whatever. When you look at them, you're like, nerd.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. I was real judgy, but very inadequate feeling. So she had done some more for that. And then we just released, I want to say, 5 new Godzilla pins in anticipation of Kaiju Brooklyn this year. So she became like the Godzilla artist. Like I had started doing something and she's like, no. She's like, no, Hedera's mine. Sorry.
That's awesome.
No.
That's awesome. I love when people fixate on a specific thing and start growing out. I'm pumped. I have a Godzilla-esque toy that I helped bring to life and
yes,
it'll be at Kaiju Brooklyn with Last Bastion. Sure. So I'm excited.
Oh,
about
great.
That.
Yeah, I know them.
And Yeah, so that's cool. But before we get to this point and like all the graphic design stuff, walk me back, take me back to that childhood. What toys we playing with? What shows we watching? What sugary cereals we eating?
So probably my first toy obsession was Star Wars. From what I hear, I don't remember because I was really little, but I saw, so my mom had told the story where I saw a trailer for Return of the Jedi when we went to see something. It might've been like Care Bears or something. And just seeing that trailer, I was like obsessed, like didn't know who any of this stuff was. And it was just like an immediate obsession. So growing up, I probably was really familiar with Return of the Jedi and had toys based on that. And I still have like a good handful of them, but like the popular characters, they just kept like, they probably made Chewbacca for every movie because they just look the same.
Yeah.
So if you were to date my Chewbacca, it's probably like, you know, Return of the Jedi era, but it all looks the same. So Star Wars was definitely my first obsession. And then I was really into G.I. Joe. But G.I. Joe, I never liked, this is really weird, I didn't like the guys with faces.
Okay.
Like Duke.
Yeah.
Real fucking boring. Destro, he has a face, but it's silver. That's cool. Cobra Commander's got a helmet or a hood. Hello. And there were a couple of Joes that like didn't have their face showing. And I remember there was a, was it Barbecue? Or he was like a flamethrower guy and he had a mask that went over his face, but you could take it off. And I was just like, no. I don't know something about like the, I just didn't want to see their faces. And then like He-Man came along and like, I didn't like any of the good guys, but the bad guys were so cool.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was probably into Transformers too, but like, I don't like looking back, I don't think like Transformers hit me as hard. You know what it was? So I was in first grade when that Transformers movie came out and that was real formative in trauma. So
Which Transformers movie? It can't be
the cartoon one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. For some reason, like my head went to Shia LaBeouf.
Oh God, I'm way older than that, dude. Clean living makes me young, but I'm like way older. But and that was so traumatic that like I was just like, "Fuck the Transformers! I'm not trans." Nope.
It's like
hard no on Transformers, and I think the G.I. Joe movie was like less traumatic, but I think they kind of broke me. Both of them. So like it kind of like looking back on both, like I don't really collect either in like their current form. I have a couple other Super 7 G.I. Joes, but that's it. But then like Ninja Turtles after that. But like I think at that point, once I hit that age, I was starting to get more into like music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that would kind of shape like more where I'd go for the next 10 years or so, getting really into heavy metal, grunge, punk, and stuff like that.
Yeah. I will say, as like a pause thing, G.I. Joe, there's a, I don't know what it is on Kickstarter.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
But I helped fund. There was a G.I. Joe one that came out where they have like little pocket guides for you get each character in there, each action figure. And then I got that one in a second book that was like every on card. Like looking so it's kind of like a checklist, but
right.
I don't love G.I. Joe, but I figured, if I like toy history, these might be a good thing to own.
So we get into
music.
And I think they cranked out so many too, if you think about it, like
too many.
Yeah.
Too many. Fair. I had the worst part about G.I. Joe is I've talked about this before. I had the worst side of it. I had something called G.I. Joe Extreme where had stupid poses where you could only move certain directions. Mm-hmm. The weapons didn't fit the hands. we tried to make the 90s too cool and it wasn't that cool.
And I think that was probably a reaction to like the post Ninja Turtle, like steroid looking toys.
Yep. Yeah.
Street Sharks and everything, and it's like you can never get a body like that,
right? And it's like every
it really X-Men. Messed up young men's body images.
Yeah,
between He-Man, it's like Ninja Turtles, like even when I was working out a lot, I never had a vein popping out like that.
No. So we get into music and we kind of leave toys and stuff behind. Yeah. Are we talking like we are in normal band at school? Are we in a punk band? Like, what kind of music are we talking here?
So probably starting at like 15, I picked up a bass guitar.
Okay.
I was playing in a band in high school. I've been in bands on and off for, you know, the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Still playing in a band. My new band just released a new single. The band's called Wallbreaker. We just put out a new song. We have an LP recorded. So we're kind of shopping it around and hoping to get that released later this year and play more shows. But yeah, I've been doing like various bands over the years, mostly in the punk and hardcore kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I said earlier, like Bleeding Edges for a while was like a cassette hardcore label.
Yeah.
Which like people were always like, oh, why are you doing cassettes? And it's like, A, it's cheap. B, you get it out really fast. And if it's punk, like cassettes are like canonical to punk. So
yeah. How did we, I mean, we do have to pause for the cause here. Bleeding Edges, how'd we come up with that? Sounds like a razor blade kind of motif.
So I think it sounds really tough on the surface. It sounds bloody. It's edgy. You're going to cut somebody. Like edge, like straight edge, which I am. And then like, it really comes down to it. Like it's a printing term. So like when you have, you know, print artwork and you have art that rolls over to the
bleed,
edge,
yeah,
the bleed, and you cut it, you know, so like a bleeding edge is it's really just like giving it like a quarter of an inch extra art on the edge that gets cut. So it's really nerdy. And I've heard other people refer to bleeding edge as like, oh, it's so cutting edge, it's bleeding. And it's like, it's such like influencer buzzwords, but and I feel like it fits really well because it sounds really tough, but like then it's also not like where it's like, if you see me, I've got like a bunch of tattoos, a shaved head, probably some sort of band shirt, but then I've got like a toy that's a penguin, you know. It's like, it's really not threatening. Like if you come to my table in an event and you start talking about cats, I'm going to start showing you pictures of mine. Like,
yeah,
it's really not as like, it's not as scary as it sounds, but like it puts that's up a, you know, your first impression is going to be like, whoa.
Yeah, that's rad. I absolutely love that. I like the things that like sound really tough or like, I want to say my best friend, when he was trying to come up with a tattoo shop name, I think Tiny Wounds was one of his names, and it feels that's a good. Lot like Bleeding Edges.
Yeah.
It's like, it's tough at the start, but when you talk about it, it's not.
It's like when there's like a really tough like band and they've got like a name that sounds hard, but like you're a nerd, so you know they got that name from an obscure X-Men character or something. Like, and it's like,
Yeah, you're like, that's not cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you stayed in music this long and that you're still producing music and doing all that. I wish I loved anything in my life to do over those years, but
I think I would have done it more if I had more opportunities, you know, like I feel like some people like do a band and they just like ride that one band for years and years and years and they tour and release and stuff. It's like, so I've always just been in like different bands, which have gone, you know, only so far.
Yeah.
But I think creatively, like, you know, like writing music is like something I enjoy doing, but at the same time, like I know doing like real hardcore punk, there's not like a market. You can't sell this to people, like, you know, unless it's softened in some way, and I'd rather not soften music. I'd rather just be like abrasive.
When did creativity outside of music start to hit? Because to be a graphic designer yourself, to be a toy designer and 3D sculptor, and then also have a wife that's a graphic designer, creativity picked up somewhere and never let loose its grip on you.
So I enjoyed art class in school.
Yeah.
Kind of knew I wasn't like the best illustrator.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, I can't draw like a face that looks good. but like I liked the idea of like logos and stuff, like symbols, like chunky shapes that made something. And so I think graphic design kind of clicked for me at some point. And I was like, okay, I know I want to get into graphic design.
Yeah.
And going through college, I figured out that I really liked packaging. So, you know, if you think about it, like if I'm collecting Star Wars toys and I'm not taking them out of the box, I'm buying it for the packaging and I'm appreciating, like, you know, you kind of dissect it as you look at it and stuff like that. And so my perfect job in my head from college was I want to become a toy packaging designer.
Yeah.
And it's been really fucking bumpy road. The graphic design industry is not easy, kind, profitable. So I've been, you know, I remember talking with some people at work and I was just like, oh, my old job did this. Oh, my old job. It's like, how many fucking jobs have you had? And I was like, I don't know, like 30. Like, I don't know. I was like freelancing. Like, there was one time I had like four jobs at once. I was just freelancing at different places. Like,
yeah,
it's rough. So it's like now what I'm doing is I'm working at a toy company doing packaging, which is what I've been wanting to do for a very long time. And it's like, sometimes I sit back and I'm like, yeah, I did it.
Which toy company are you at right now?
I don't know if I should say.
Deal. Deal.
What's up?
Deal. That makes sense. That's good.
Like, just because I'm not a representative of that company.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like I'm me, I work for them, but I'm not like representing you.
Right.
So I will say they're in the top 10, if not top 5 toy companies in the country.
Enough that I've seen the toy that you worked on.
So, and I work on Disney Junior packaging. So yeah, if you go to your toy store, you look at the Disney Junior packaging and flip it over, you'll see a logo. That's the company I work for, sure.
Yeah. Take me back to a couple of the early companies that you worked for. I mean, starting graphic design and stuff. When did you figure out that, like, you wanted to do toy packaging and stuff, but learning that skill is a lot. So when did you kind of merge those two?
So I think you kind of learn a lot on the job as opposed to like in school. So I was working for a couple of companies that did child's licensed products.
Okay.
And working with licensing and style guides, you kind of get used to like the look of like making stuff for kids, which is like my wife does like beauty products, which is like a completely different look.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just getting used to like, okay, here's how you treat like colors. Here's how you treat text and stuff like that. So, you know, I did like a lot of arts and crafts, like a Spider-Man art set that was like a coloring page. So that was like one of those like felt coasters with markers. Like I was working on the packaging for stuff like that for a while. And then I was working on licensed like children's bed sheets and like those like fleece throws that had like Paw Patrol and stuff. But all of that sort of led to... And I was working for a toy company that did slime toys when that was real big for a minute.
Yeah.
And so that was my first, like, I think that was the first actual toy company I worked for. But doing all of the licensing, like, I think is what really got me to where I am now. And then, like, when it came to packaging, I was always, like, somebody who thought a little out of the box where it was like, all right, that's cool, but what if it was a triangle? That's great, but, like, what if, like, we had a weird die cut, you know? Yeah. So. Things like that I've always been like drawn to, like that's always been some sort of my, like, you know, in my back pocket of like, I have an interest in like doing something slightly weird. Let's try it.
Mm-hmm.
So like something like that, like, but that's also like a different thinking where it's like, you got to think, what will the final look like, but then mentally make it flat so that you can then design it and fold it back together, like almost like origami to like do this. You know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, but like, I'm always really proud when like, I can be like, kind of push the, you know, within the outer specs, like push things a bit.
Yeah.
It's been appealing.
That's why, I mean, I was so pumped to send you that one website.
Yeah. That
website is so
stupid. And I totally
stupid.
Use it at work and other people at work use it too. Like I shared it with the team and they're all like, dude,
it is wild. It like for anyone listening, Pacdora. Pacdora? Pictora.
P-A-C-D-O-R-A.
Yeah, and like, it's like
packaging Pandora.
I don't know if I've never paid for it. Do you guys pay for it now?
Hell no.
I trace it. Yeah.
I get it to the shape I want, and then I screen grab it, and then I trace it, and then I resize it. Yeah, so, I've been in graphic design like 20-something years, bro. I know how to do this. It is
wild how cool it is, because it's like there's a slider on it where you can take the box from like fully closed to like fully dial on, just cut cuts. And it's
there were things I was looking at that were like flat. I was like, oh, this looks perfect. And then you do the slider where you see how it like animates it, how it like opens. And I was like, oh no, that's not what I want at all.
Yeah.
So like, it's crazy. Like it's really like changing the game.
it was so cool to find. And that's how I've done a lot of packaging, which is cool. And so as you start doing this packaging, you're like going through these jobs and you're picking up skills along the way. And I'm a big proponent that every job you've had until the one that you currently have has taught you how to do the one you currently have.
Fair.
It's giving you something. Yeah. So walk me through some of the more problematic jobs you've had that are like teaching you how to really do graphic design.
So
yeah, there we go. I love that's how you know it's a good story when it starts out with so.
My first job was doing value DVDs that they would sell in Walmart, and they were like they were such garbage quality movies, but like we had to make the covers look good because that's all they sold, and they sold for $1.
Yeah,
and keep in mind this is like the early 2000s, like 2004 or five. And that was my first graphic design job, and it was fine, but the pay was like nothing.
Yeah.
And like to the point where like the other people I worked with were like, man, I'm not doing good. And they were and I was like, I found out they were making more than me.
Yeah.
So it's like, Jesus, like, how are you making more than me? And I'm doing the same thing as you. So I left that job to work for an agency, and that agency was actually like had a really good. That's where I learned to do like some style guide stuff. And I learned production, and production in packaging is once a packaging designer finishes it, they hand it off to you and you get it ready for production. You check the colors, dye line, just making sure everything's good before it goes to print. So I learned a lot of skills at that job. But the owner was not great to the point where there were three owners and one of them went to jail for a while for like bank fraud.
Yeah, as we do.
The accountant has to take the fall for that. And then the other two were like legally not allowed to like start a new business, but then they still found a way to start a business. It was really weird. They're still in the industry. So fuck them. Yeah. But everyone I worked at that job was cool, except for the owner. Mm-hmm. And then the stock market crash hit and I was out of work for like 2 years.
Okay.
But they were like extended unemployment insurance. So I was just coasting by on insurance, doing freelance work here and there. And I'm trying to think, I went back to school to be a baker. And I realized I really didn't want to be a baker. But it was kind of like when those like Asa cakes were real big.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, I can like decorate a cake like the way I would decorate like a money, because I was starting to get into like designer toys around.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can decorate it. I can like do a toy custom. What if I did a cake custom? No, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. I didn't want to do that. I hated it. There's a lot of math in baking and I don't like that.
Yeah.
So I ended up finding a job at an agency in New York. And mostly what I did there was I did production there. I didn't do design, but I worked on the Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I got to look at like a lot of Fred and Barney at that job. And like there was other like stuff we did, but like post cereal and like the Pebbles, they refreshed all the time. Yeah. But like the other ones, they didn't like touch as much. So like 9 times out of 10, I had like Cocoa Pebbles on my screen.
Yeah.
And then that job went out of business. Well, no, I think they're still in business, but they like massively are. They're probably like three people working there now.
Yeah.
And then I was working for a company. They're not in business anymore, so I could say the name. They were called Quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And Quirky was like really hyped. There was like a reality show about Quirky And everybody thought Quirky was this big, like, wave of the future, like venture capitalist money, like flowing into it.
Yeah.
Because everyone thought it was so cool. And they had like a fancy office with a snack. It was like the first place they had like the snack wall. And they had like a smoothie machine at some point. It was like kind of like Silicon Valley looking.
Yeah.
And then at some point they brought in like a new accountant. And the accountant realized that none of the stuff we made made money. So... So they were like, oh shit, like all the money we have is just people investing in us. So they were like building new offices. They were expanding our office. So
yeah.
This company's doing great. And then it was like, oh wait, no, we're not. These people are just dumb with money. But you know, I learned a bit about production in that one. And that was a bit more like a little more tech. So after that, like I'd start doing a little bit of work in like the tech thing. Like I was doing packaging for like headphones and, those like battery pack things. It was fine. And then from that, I got a call out of the blue from somebody through LinkedIn to work at Apple. And I was working at, they like flew me out to California for,
heck yeah.
Geez, how long was it? I want to say it was like 6 weeks.
Oh,
I worked at Apple in like the Cupertino office.
Yeah.
6 weeks, then like a month went by and they brought me again for another 3 weeks. And then maybe like 4 months later, they brought me again for another 4 weeks.
To so design like was, or interview or what?
No, I was doing production work. So what it was they brought in like tons of people right before they did a launch. And just I was just basically checking the website for different languages to make sure everything lined up right.
Yeah.
It was like really simple, but like, I don't know. It was kind of an adventure to work for Apple.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then after that, I was working at a toy company, the slime company, and that was kind of local in New Jersey. And at
what point did you kind of start? Because it switches, right? You're doing all this 3D or this graphic design, and then you have 3D sculpting that kind of comes in the mix, or toy making. And you said you picked up designer toys at a certain point. So
yeah,
merge those for me.
So I want to say when I was at the company that was doing the licensed like arts and crafts stuff, a bunch of us would go to this comic shop, and the comic shop had Dunnies and Munnies and Kid Robots stuff.
Yeah.
So the other guys would pick up like comic stuff, and I was like, "What's this all about?" And I used to have a subscription to Juxtapose, and I would see like designer toy stuff, but it never like clicked because it was just in a magazine. It was whatever. I never saw it in person. And then I saw something and I was like, that's a Dunny. How do I know that's a Dunny?
Yeah.
That's weird. So I picked a Dunny up, and then I got a money from the internet to paint. You know, and that was like sort of my like gateway was the Kid Robot stuff for a while. And then I remember Super 7 did the Gorilla Biscuits toy, which is a hardcore band from the 80s, like had a logo of a big gorilla. And I always thought it was cool. So the fact that they made like a vinyl toy of it, I was like, yeah, I gotta get this. And then from then I was like, oh, okay, Super 7's my thing now. I'm not into Kid Robot anymore. And I would buy a lot of the Super 7 stuff. And then you find out like, oh, it's a Fubi because it's softer than the Kid Robot stuff. Okay, that makes sense. And then you get into sort of the more other stuff. But it, as far as like creating my own stuff, like I've been doing like the pins and stuff for longer than I've been doing toy stuff, but in working for, you know, a couple toy companies and stuff over the years, I had to help a little bit with, like specs and turnarounds and like stuff that a product designer would do.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that somebody had to do it. And I kind of got the idea of like, I kind of understand this. Let me do this. So like, I don't know how to sculpt, but I know how to make a professional, like what a person working in the industry would do as a product designer, and do the specs, the turnarounds, the colors and everything like that. And I knew how to do the colors from doing pins, and it all sort of like meshed, you know, I'm an okay illustrator, but good enough that I could do like a turnaround and, you know, so a sculptor can kind of take it and go somewhere else with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like as far as that one, that was all sort of like that was more of an evolution, I guess, like in doing the pins and like here's the colors. OK, here's the, you know, different angles and stuff. Like I think the pins really sort of opened things up for me.
I mean, kind of let's dive. We're going to for sure hit Catloaf and all that stuff, but like, let's dive into the pins. When I first started doing the podcast, there was a podcast called Pin Pals.
And, oh, yeah. I know that guy.
I thought it was the goofiest thing to have a podcast about enamel pins. That's a full disclosure moment for me.
No, but I think you get to into the artist's head to do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And in my head, I was like, oh, pins or whatever. There's a world to pins. There's different styles of pins. There's different like soft and hard and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really like started looking at that and really thinking about what that looks like to even one day do my own pins and stuff. And which Toys on Tab has some, and that's cool. And but going through that whole thing, it was so weird to see that world open up. So you get into pins.
Yeah.
And tell me about that. Cause that's a crazy world.
And when I got into it was right when it was kind of popping off too.
Okay.
So I was doing a record label, you know, like I said, like just punk stuff. And I would distribute other people's music and like go to shows and like have this box of records. And like, I'm trying to sell these records to people. And then the one in New York that went out of business, that we were cleaning out the office, like toward the end. And I found a button maker, like those things where you put the bottom, you put the top, you crunch it down. And I was like, okay, well, if I got these records, what if I made a bunch of like bootleg punk and hardcore buttons?
Okay.
So I started like designing my own buttons. Like, you know, the office was like kind of dead. So I'm just printing like circles to cut out at the office. And I started out making like 3-inch buttons. They weren't like the little one, they were big. So you could see some art, but the whole point was like, oh, you're going to buy a record from me, but you could also buy this pin for like $2 or whatever.
Yeah.
So that sort of evolved and I was enjoying that, but I was like, I don't really like this button thing. Like, it's not really a thing. And I was between jobs, I was working at a friend's screen print shop and one of the guys there was making pins and he's like, oh yeah, like do an enamel pin, like go to these guys. So I went to this one company, I had a design ready and they made it. And I was like, yo, this is fun. So, cause like, you know, when you do a button, it's like crunch, it's done, it's a circle. But when you have like a die cut enamel, I think it was my first pin I ever did, is right here. So this is, it's Bart Simpson,
yeah, but he's
like skanking.
Yeah.
There's an old band called the Circle Jerks and this was their logo of a guy skanking. So I did it as Bart and I thought it was funny. Like, it was also when like bootleg Bart stuff was big too.
Yeah.
So like that was my first pin and that was like really fun. So I did that. I think I just did 100. I never made more, but it was like fun. So I made more and more and more and more. And it, you know, sort of escalated to the point where the 3-inch buttons were like kind of pushed to the side. But then like the buttons grew out of the record label, which then got put to the side. So then like I was like, oh, well, like doing music's very temperamental. Like you really only get like maybe like a month to really sell something and then it's not new. And unless you're playing a show and you're selling it, no one's going to buy it, you know? So like, but with a pin, it's like, I can throw it on Etsy till the end of time.
Yeah.
And if it sells, it sells, you know? And then when the last one goes, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, we did it. Yeah.
But it may take years, but like you did it finally. Yeah. So I was like, well, there seems to be something more sustainable about doing these pins. And, you know, I guess like in punk and stuff, like I've always said, like punk is allergic to money. So it's like, why am I charging $5 for this record that costs me $350? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, I can get this pin made for like $3 and charge like 10 is the going rate.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I don't have to give any away to a band. It's like, this is working out pretty good. But like, I always enjoyed designing, like whenever I've been in bands or like friends were in bands, I've always enjoyed designing their merch.
Yeah.
So it was like, it kind of took the middleman of a band out of making merch where it was like, I didn't have to wait until we recorded to do a record cover. I could just draw a new pin and get it out. And then from pins, it evolved to patches and stickers soon after. Like stickers seemed like a good idea too. And doing local... in New Jersey, there's something called the Trenton Punk Rock Flea Market. That was like the first event I ever did And I think I was still doing the 3-inch buttons and the record distro stuff. And my wife was doing like embroidered stuff at the time. So like we were selling stuff. It was fine.
Yeah.
But then once like the pin thing, it was like, okay, we got like this pin, the pin thing is our thing. Okay.
Yeah. and then your wife jumps in, gets on it, and you guys start producing pins and Godzilla pins, which Godzilla pins, like, great. You should always, you should.
Yeah.
Which there is a pin idea I do want to talk to you about now because you're talking, you're doing Godzilla pins. Right. And then you tell me about Catloaf and it's like Inception and stuff. Does that come from the pin? Cause there is a pin of it.
It did. It did. So, I had started doing resin.
Okay.
And I'm not going to be like, yo, resin fun and great. And I love it. I'm really good at it. Resin kind of sucks. I actually don't have. So the first thing I was looking over here, I have like a pile of stuff, but the first thing I ever did in resin, I was just in my basement. I looked over and there's these, what's it called? They're these little cats and the cats are like in these mech suits.
Okay.
Neko Abuso or something like that. So you build the mech suit and you put the cat in it. So a friend of mine like sent me like a shitload of them for my birthday. Shout out Daniel. Thanks, Daniel. So, and I had one of them and like, there's two cats. There's one sitting upright and there's one in like in the loaf pose, like sitting down. So the first resin thing I did was I made a mold of one of their cats in the loaf pose. And, you know, just experimenting with resin, I ended up having like a bunch of different molds and you try different things. And then like, I had like a handful of these stupid little loafy cats or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if I make a funny header card, they'll probably sell. So I was just doodling around and I was like, what if I called it Catloaf? Cause he's like, you know, he's leaning over in that pose. And, I drew the header card for these, like, I don't know, six cat toys. Yeah. And it was the Catloaf logo.
Oh, he's great. And
showed it to my friend Daniel, the one who sent it to me, and he's like, holy shit, this is the best thing you've ever done.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. This was like literally something I was gonna throw away on like $6-$5 resin bullshit things.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, there's something to this. Like, let me make a sticker. So I made stickers. They did pretty good. And I was like, well, I gotta do a pin. Did a pin. And kind of got to thinking like this might be something cool to do as like, or maybe a resin toy or something. Like at that point, like in my head, I was like, I could do more resin stuff and it's fun. I could do it in my basement and it's fine. It's not my favorite.
Yeah.
It exists. It's not a prominent part of my table at events, but it exists and it's there.
Yeah.
Side thing, my most popular resin piece is this. It is lightning in a bottle.
Oh, he's so cool.
It's a little clear, glittery, and it's got like a little tag and it's in a bottle. Like that's actually kind of popular. Lightning
that's
in a bottle.
Really smart to do because it's
very
a good simple. Way to do cheap resin and sell it quickly.
Yeah. And this, I get the bottles off like Amazon. They're like for wedding tchotchkes or whatever. And then I just make these little lightning bolts and paint the face on. And like I've made stickers and pins of lightning in a bottle and people think it's cute. But so Catloaf, I think the way that it, so I'd been thinking about doing it. I had, you know, a friend of mine was working on the sculpt and I ran into somebody that I know who owns like a distribution company. He distributes my pins and stuff. And he's like, I was just giving out stuff to people when I run into them.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And he's like, oh, there's something to this character. You should maybe think about doing it as like a toy. And I was like, I actually have it being sculpted right now. And he's like, what if you did like a blind box series? And I was like, that's crazy. And then I thought about it more and more. And I was like, not crazy.
It's not as crazy as you think. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was kind of thinking back to those early days of collecting toys. And I was like, shit, I loved like Kid Robot blind boxes. And people are really into blind boxes now, I think probably more than they were like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, I might look into. So I did like a lot of research, bought a bunch of different boxes just to see like, okay, this is what people are doing. This, I don't like this, but I do like this. And yet I started developing a whole, you know, a bunch of different options and different colorways and whatnot, and using my, you know, background in specking colors for pins to do everything and packaging and all that. So it's sort of been like an amalgamation of different points in my life where I figured out that you could just do stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that I always credit like punk rock with that too. Like punk rock is like DIY. Like you want to do this, just do it. You want to start a band, call like three fucking idiots and play some fucking music. Like you want to like put out a record, like just get money and just do it. Like,
yeah,
it's not hard to like do things. You can just do things. And like, you know, I guess like other people will be like, oh man, we did this thing, but like nobody wanted to do it. It's like, well, why didn't you just do it?
Yeah.
So, which is like,
how long ago?
Stupid and irresponsible.
How long ago when you first, from the moment, because I think this is kind of like, I have one of your pins in front of me, mm-hmm. and I also have Cat Loaf in front of me. And so it's like, how long ago did you come up with the idea of Cat Loaf to the point of having this? Not the spec sheet, but this whole thing. Yeah.
So not that long, really. So I, you know, from doing the header art that was the throwaway, to doing like a sticker and a pin. You know, I think the idea for the toy, like I said, I think I was just gonna do it as a resin thing,
right.
And it was gonna be like whatever. Like I wasn't really putting that much stock into it. You know, so I want to say like maybe less than a year between like the like initial drawing and, you know, a toy probably.
And then
how
long till now?
About another year.
Okay. So Cat Loaf's been around
a little bit. Yeah. I mean, but I've done a couple of other vinyl toys over the years too. Like this isn't my first time making a toy. My first toy I made in 2018. There was a character that a friend of mine and I created called Bearito, which was a burrito bear. I actually have, it's probably going to be hard to see because I'm wearing black and this is black.
But he's great.
It's a bear in a burrito costume and he's got like the filling sticking out of the top. Was fun. So this was actually made in. It's vinyl. It was made in Mexico, actually.
It's amazing.
Because I thought it was really funny to make burrito in Mexico. And at the time, it was like, you can make it in China, but you have to make like 300 or so.
Yeah.
Or you can make it in Japan, and you got to wait 3 years to have it out and pay double. So we went with Mexico, and I probably wouldn't go back to Mexico. Like the guy I partnered with on it, like he's made a couple other colorways, but I'm just like, we're good. Let it be what it is. That was 2018, 2019. And then probably more 2018. And then the next toy I did was Dr. Plaguin, which is a little plague Dr. Penguin.
That's this little guy in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one was sort of like the lessons learned from Bearito. I don't want to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
This is really big. It's got three parts. This is one part. It's like the finger puppet style. And the sculptor that we used for him is good for Bearito. I didn't know him personally. I knew the guy I worked with did it, worked with him to do it. So there's this guy that I know. He goes by the name Mechazone.
Okay.
He was actually working for Super 7 until recently. He did like the giant Mecha Godzilla they did. Like, he sculpted that, but he also sculpted Dr. Plaguin here. And he did such a good job. Like I feel like I went back and look at like my turnaround spec sheet and it looks like such garbage compared to like the final product. Like he really like He really made it look great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Do you still produce these?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So there, I've done, geez, I don't even know how many colorways I've done of that by now.
Yeah.
It's been a little while since I've done a new one. I try to do them to coincide with events. Mm-hmm. The last one that came out, my friend Mikey, who does Scum Pit Toys, painted a run for Assembly Required back in February. That was the most recent one.
That's awesome.
Have you talked to Scum Pit Toys, by the way?
I don't think so. I see him on Instagram. I just haven't talked to him yet.
You need to talk to him.
Okay.
you may need two episodes to talk to him. He's the amount of stuff he's got in the tank and the amount of stuff he's currently got is mind blowing. He's awesome. So motivated and does such cool stuff. But yeah, so then we did that was Dr. Plaguin, and then I did a lot of merch with this like a vintage black cat from like Halloween costumes and stuff. So like
this little cat
kind of evolved, and then it was a sticker, it was a patch, and the patch does really good actually. The patch is the most popular. Actually, the Bearito patch is more popular than the Bearito toy, which is weird.
Which is so crazy. That Bearito toy is insane.
Yeah, I think so. The Bearito did not do great. I don't know if it was a price point or whatever.
Tell me about the price point. Great.
I originally was charging $50. Okay. And then nowadays, if you see me, I think I've got two left. They're 35.
How big is it?
It's like 5 inches.
Okay.
So 50's
not crazy.
I don't think so. So compare it to Dr. Plaguin.
Yeah.
Which I charged 35 painted. I charged 20 unpainted for Dr. Plaguin because I want people to buy and paint them.
Okay.
Because that's sort of like where I grew up, you know, like I learned about these designer toy things by painting my own. So if I can like give you a bro deal and like I probably could charge 25, but like if I take $5 off and you paint it and I see it, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd rather have that. So then the next toy I was saying was the cat. So we did Halloween cat here.
Yep.
And this one and Dr. Plaguin were both done through Mile High Safubi in America.
Awesome.
Dr. Plaguin was actually I was his first client, basically.
Okay.
I forgot who it was. It was somebody did like an interview with him and was like, yo, somebody's going to be making toys in America. So I was like, that's sick. So I hit him up like, hey, I want to make a toy in America. Let's talk.
And right
like,
away.
Sure, cool.
Yeah.
And it was like maybe like 2 days after the article came out, and I didn't even have a finished sculpt, but it was working on it. And I was going to be at DesignerCon. He was going to be at DesignerCon. So we're like, let's meet up at DesignerCon. So we talked to DesignerCon and I met Paul, and Paul's awesome. As you know,
yeah.
You've had him on the show. He's great. So like I hit him up and you know, I was like, I got it ready. What do you think? And he kind of gave me like a basic like price breakdown, like at my table. It was kind of awesome. I did that and I recommended my friend Pete, who does Monster Bloodbath as well. So like Pete and I were like his first two clients, but I sent Pete to him, so I'm actually the first client. So there's a lot of like, you know, and I think because of that, I think a lot of people were interested in the toy because I was like the guinea pig of like nobody wanted to like give it a shot. And so like I think there was definitely some like big names in the toy world who bought it, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think they were just buying it to test it out, which I'll take it, you know.
Yeah, that is cool. I think that, and then so you have two vinyl toys out there.
Three
vinyl toys out there. Two that are still produced. One that's on the. And I mean,
Marito's retired, but
yeah,
I still have a few. But then,
but
yeah,
still could get to it if you really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to, I don't. I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good letting that one rest. I think the guy that I did it with probably still has some empty ones too that I could probably always buy off him if I needed to.
Yeah, I mean, you could get the mold and send it to Paul.
So that's part of the reason why I didn't want to get it remade, because the mold kind of sucks. Some of the nails, like for the feet,
yeah,
like they didn't come through on some of them, and when I got them, I like messaged the dude and I was like, hey, look,
this is garbage.
These kind of suck. And he was like, well, is what it is. And I was like,
we're
not going to order more.
Yeah, that is a thing that sometimes exists in the toy scene. And I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not satisfied with it is what it is. I don't know that.
No, because I paid you money to make
right,
it.
Right.
And you just have pride and make it good.
Yeah. Just like start over if we have to. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. Even if they okay. were like, you know, we'll re-pull, like, because it was the bottom hat, like the bottom like chunk that like, you know, yeah. at the waist. Even if they were like, okay, we'll pull another, you know, 30 bottoms and we'll get it right this time. And I, you know, I keep the rest and throw away the bad ones. Nothing. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I don't like that at all. People no, get and so like there's been
times
it.
With I know, like even with like Mile High Safubi, there's been times like originally when he pulled the plague wind, the beak, like there was like a little air bubble at the tip of the beak.
Yeah.
And that was just in like a test pull. And I mean, he was like, no problem, won't happen again. We'll yeah. fix it.
And that's because Paul's always, a good guy.
And he would always send me like extras. Like yeah. there was one time I ordered like 25 and I got like 32.
Yeah.
Because some of them were like a little stretched out or something like that. And it's like, I'm still going to sell them.
Yeah. He did. When I made the Chum Shark with Pocket yeah. Salsa, he did that one for us. And as you get it from him. And if you're doing a two part, you're like sitting in front of the TV, shaving all the stuff and putting it together.
Yep. That's and, how I did. Because this is four parts. Is
yeah. And so it's just like,
I cut my finger on the first like batch.
Yeah.
And like real bad, like oh. nerve damage bad.
Oh my gosh. And he sent me one extra bottom. And it was like, how did that, like they're in the tray together. How did that happen? I just left it on there. It's fine. So we do all these toys and you've been making toys for a while now. And yeah. all this is going on. Are you doing shows? Are you doing like, oh, yeah. what's that kind of look like for you with pins and with toys and stuff?
So for me, the toy stuff is the passion project.
Yeah.
Doing events locally and some of the more like national ones like Five Points, Designer Con, Kaiju Brooklyn's getting bigger. But locally, I've been doing the punk rock flea markets. I did something called Indie Toy Fest in like yeah. Western Mass. I did Assembly Required down in Asheville, North Carolina, which I'm doing it again in Philly. I'm going out for Collected Con in Chicago. Heck so like yeah. I've got like three currently booked with like my summer's booked basically. I got like three tour dates, but I've yeah. done a few local stuff. I did like a Star Wars event recently because I have a lot of Star Wars pins. But yeah, so like more or less the pins are what like keeps everything afloat. Whereas like if I sell one, maybe two at like a non-toy convention, like, but really the pins and patches is what keeps things afloat. And the toys are just sort of like that's what I enjoy doing. Like, not that I don't enjoy making pins and patches, but I think, you know, hand painting a toy that I designed is like really fun and cool.
Yeah.
You know, even working in like the larger toy industry, like you send it out to China and it comes back done. Like you don't like in your awesome. Garage with an airbrush. Yeah,
it's awesome.
But some of the people at work know that I paint toys now and they'll hand me prototypes that are unpainted. And so they'll be like, oh, hey, do you want this? I was like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
So like I guess I could say now because it's in stores, but there's a big 15-inch vinyl, like hollow vinyl stitch for the movie.
Yeah.
It's big. And I got one of the prototypes and I painted it like you would paint like a Godzilla, you know? Yeah. So it's got like the, you know, the spray and that's the awesome. Masking and stuff. And I have it at my desk and people like come by like, oh shit, that's so cool. You know? Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that, I enjoy more cause you're working with your hands and stuff, versus just getting a fully produced toy. Like it's here and it's done. But yeah, I think the pins and the patches are really like stickers too. Depending on what the event is, sometimes stickers in numbers will outsell the pins. But obviously a pin costs more money.
Yeah. Which is rad.
Like the toys don't really move the radar on like anything that's not a toy convention.
Yet. Yet.
Well, I mean, I bring them to have yeah. them there and engage. But I will say, I was at an event, you know, I guess the beginning of May. It was May the 4th. So yep. It was May the 4th with Star Wars. And there was a dad and he was buying stuff. He was buying some Star Wars pins for himself, and his kid looks and sees the Cat Loaf thicker. And he's like, oh, Dad, I want cat loaf.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's calling him by name. Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
Like a little kid, like, just grabbed it. So, like, I think, you know, and in talking with other people, I was talking with a bunch of people at Assembly Required too. And it seems like young boys and like tween girls are like really into the idea of cat loaf.
And can that be on the box? Made for young boys and tween girls.
No, but we'll just aim it to them. But no, I think that, so like, you know, there is something there. Like, nobody's ever picked up and be like, oh, it's Dr. Plaguin. Like, you know, or oh, it's a Halloween cat. Like, but no, cat loaf really seems to resonate with people.
Yeah.
Just because it's very stilly.
I will say that, I think I've told you this, that when I'm doing a toy with someone, I'll take it to my friend who doesn't collect toys, doesn't do anything with toys. And when we do that, his reaction helps me understand what a non-toy person is going to do. And so when I took him cat loaf and I said, listen, this is the plan. This is what I want to pitch Jeff about this toy. Yeah. And he was like, I want them. And so it was like, okay, this is good. He's a cat person. Mm. I think personally, like, the size is perfect.
An Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Yeah. I have all of the abominable popsicle ones, the blind box thing.
The chomp ones.
Yeah, and they're pretty big, but like on my shelf, a cat loaf is the perfect size because shelf space is always what we're chasing.
And I think, like, if you have like a monitor at work, you put it under the monitor and it's just staring at you. Like, it's a good, like, it's long because it's a loaf of bread, but it's also small.
Right. And so I think there was something there. And so, I mean, announcing it here, like, I approached you and was like, hey, this needs to happen. Like, let's figure out a way to work together to make sure that this happens, because I've never done this, but I think that this is worthwhile to learn and push through.
And I was actually thinking of doing it as – I was going to drop the idea of the blind box and do it as a plush.
Yeah.
But then with the tariffs hitting, I was like, I'm not making shit.
Because
it would have been a situation where it was like, okay, I get this out, and then it comes in time for like collected con or something, and I can have the plush. But then it was like, yeah, how about I just don't do that?
Right.
So I still want to do a plush, but it's backburnered.
Sure. I mean, I will say that, like, tariffs now are in the back of my head at all times.
Mm-hmm.
That will not stop. Like, I'm way too into certain ideas and way too into toys to let that intimidate me.
Mm-hmm.
Am I always thinking about it every time I pitch another toy? Hell yeah. Like, I'm currently like watching the news.
Even at my day job, it's something that comes up every day. Like, you know, our entire like fall line, which would be out in time for Christmas, was like in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Like, we were like, what do we do?
Yeah. And
I just kind of sat for a month or so.
The doom and gloom that we see in the toy scene currently, mm-hmm. there's a way to like, today I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's because I have a toy that's in production now, and it'll be here and hit the 30% tariff, which is like, it's a bummer.
It's not the 145 or 245.
Right. He said, doesn't that suck? And I said, yeah, I mean, when you put it in comparison to the de minimis thing that's now gone and to the 8% or whatever it was, yeah, it's a bummer. Mm-hmm. But let's celebrate the good thing that it's not 145 right now. Like, I'm just getting someone on the last episode that we recorded, someone said, yeah, what it feels like is I got a boot off my neck and just got kicked in the nuts instead, which is a really good explanation for this.
That's
like,
pretty accurate.
It sucks, but I'm not going to let this intimidate me to stop making toys because I'm passionate about it.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing that, like, I have to ask every artist then, with this all these things that you're doing and you're crushing it and you're like making toys and pins and patches and stickers and all this, mm-hmm. and you got a full summer, look out a year. What's next?
Bleeding Edges slash BXE Buttons is yep. most likely going to keep doing more pins.
Okay.
We're going to have, we'll say, let's hypothetically say we'll have a full Cat Loaf blind box series okay. available.
Yeah.
With that, I would probably want to do more events and try to like diversify like Comic-Con and anime type stuff maybe. Which is something I never really jumped into as much because a lot of time it's a bigger commitment.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and once fall hits, I'm going to hit Halloween Cat hard again with promoting it because it doesn't really sell throughout the year, but then during the Halloween season, it will.
Yeah, it picks up.
It'll pick up once like August hits probably. So I'll be pushing that. I mean, I'd really love to have a plush. Of Cat Loaf, like loaf of bread sized.
Yeah.
like a big squishy loaf of bread with a cat face.
Yeah.
There's this I haven't showed you yet. This is a head sculpt.
Oh.
So cool. this is a character I'm working on once again with Scum Pit Toys.
Yeah.
One of their bodies is gonna get this head and it'll be a new character. This is War Death.
Awesome.
It's like the spirit of war and death. And yeah. it's based on the War Duke character from Dungeons and Dragons mixed yeah. with Magneto, but in its own little spin. I'm going to put a skull because I really like skulls.
It is chaotic for me that you have a Cat Loaf that's meant for mm-hmm. young boys and tween girls. Oh, yeah. And then you also have no. War Death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. That's me. This is Bleeding Edges at its core of like, yeah. I love cats. Yeah. But I love really aggressive music.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So this fits more. My music tastes,
okay.
and this fits my aesthetic taste.
Yeah.
it's like the two sides of me
yeah.
of like a skull character. But yeah, in general, I'll probably, I'd like to do more stuff like this, but not as much as I want to do stuff like this. Where I'd rather do cute stuff than like badass heavy metal looking stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'd like to do more badass heavy metal punk looking stuff.
Yeah.
Like awesome. There'll probably be like a heavy metal Cat Loaf in the next wave.
That's gotta be one of the chase. Like there's two in every thousand. Series. Yeah.
That's the full series is getting like leather jacket Cat Loaf.
Leather Cat Loaf, yuck.
with like with studs on the jacket.
Sick. Dude, it has been so good having you on Toys on Tap and talking through.
Yeah, this was fun.
All the craziness that is Bleeding Edges. The yeah. last part of the podcast is plugging away all the stuff where people can find you, how they can work yeah. for you, work with you, all those things. So please plug away.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Bleeding Edges. My pins and everything, anything I make and attempt to sell, that's going to be at BXE Buttons X Station Made. You could buy everything on bxebuttons.com. At the same time, I got the record right here. My band is called Wallbreaker.
Heck yeah.
We have a new single called Choice Now. It is on Spotify. And if you want to buy it on our Bandcamp, you just Google Wallbreaker HC, I believe, .bandcamp.com. We have the single there in a limited to 50 lathe that all the profits are going to abortion access.
And if you're listening, instead of the end to the episode, we'll just play one of the songs from Wallbreaker.
Sick. Play Choice Now. That's our new single. I wrote the music.
dude, thank you so much again for coming on Toys on Top.